Today, deeper in the mire, the DFA Daily for the 31st of March 2020. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, with my latest post covering finance and problem news with a distinctively Australian flavour. APRA released their banking statistics to the end of February 2020 today. It's the last day of the month, of course, and they are using the new economic and financial statistics data collection, which modernised the collection of data submitted by both banks, ADIs, and registered financial corporations. Now, back in the halcyon days of February, remember when stock markets hit that all-time high? Total mortgage lending growth from the banks was in fact already weak, with investment lending balances falling slightly and owner-occupied lending growing on a net basis. Some of this was driven by households choosing to pay down loans thanks to their own financial uncertainty, and this, by the way, could have proved to be a very smart move based on what we know now. The share of investment mortgages in the portfolio dropped to 36.8%, with the total exposures up to $1.75 trillion, with owner-occupied loans at $1.1 trillion and investment loans at $0.64 trillion. In percentage terms, investment balances fell by 0.03%, or $170 million, and owner-occupied loans rose 0.3%, or $3.3 billion, giving total loan growth of 0.18%, or $3.17 billion. Ahead, of course, interest will be rolled up into the balances for the duration, but the number of new mortgages may slow, so it's going to be hard to predict what happens as some seek to switch loans or even sell quickly. Portfolio movements within the banks, as reported by APRA, is subject to a range of potential input errors, but with that caveat, it seems that CBA, Macquarie, Bendigo and HSBC were lending more freely, while NAB and Westpac saw their investor balances fall, whereas ANZ dropped both sets of balances, and ING and Bank of Queensland dropped investor loans, while Suncorp dropped owner-occupied balances, while growing investor loan balances once again. And meantime, the RBA aggregate figures were also out today. They reported total credit grew 0.4% in February, and that's 2.8% over the year, compared to 4.1% a year before. So more signs of slowing. Within that, lending for housing rose 0.3% in February to 3.2% over the year, compared with 4.2% a year ago. Business lending rose 0.9% in February to reach 3.5% over the year, compared with 5.1% a year back. And personal credit dropped 0.5% in February and is down 5.3% over the year, compared with 2.6% down the previous year. A more granular analysis shows that lending for owner occupation is where the growth was, at 5.1% annualised, up from a low of 4.8% back in October, hardly a stellar recovery since then. Investment lending is still falling slightly, and broad money is falling down to 4.1% annualised, despite the rise in credit. So all signs of weakness before the current health crisis is freezing the economy, and it may be pretty academic now, but there it is for the record. And we continue to see more troubling news. For example, economist Callum Pickering revealed that job postings in Australia have collapsed by 24% versus the same time last year, with weakness across almost every occupational group, other than healthcare and supermarkets. At the same time, searches for supermarket jobs have surged to record highs. And former ANZ chief economist Warren Hogan yesterday forecast that Australia's unemployment rate could hit between 15 and 17% by Easter, suggesting we will probably see about 1.5 to 1.8 million job losses due to the economic freeze. And if so, this would be an economic disruption in the same quantum as the 1930s Great Depression. And the latest surveys, this time from the ANZ Roy Morgan Australian Consumer Confidence Index, shows that whilst future finances and inflation expectations rose just a little bit, the current economic conditions fell 9% lower, and it's down more than 50% over 2 weeks to the lowest level ever. And this echoes data in our own surveys too. Households are hunkering, not spending. And we described the latest Morrison government's JobKeeper initiative yesterday, which is centred around a $1,500 a fortnight wage subsidy aimed at about 6 million workers. But the more I look at it, the more questions I have. First and simply, if people are on the scheme, they are still technically employed, so the unemployment rate will not reflect the real situation of many, something which I have highlighted before, but it's now going to be true in spades. And even the underutilization metric might be understated, although this will still be a better read on the true situation. And perhaps there is a parallel to the APRA move not to classify mortgage repayment holidays as delinquent, so as to keep a lid on the poor statistics, and by the way, the capital, which would normally put against defaults to boot. So some of this can be trying to keep the figures looking more healthy than perhaps they really are. And on the package, one point that's worthy of note is that there is a delay between payments from the ATO and payments to people on the books of the firms who are going to receive these payments. It looks like cash-strapped businesses will need to pay employees at once and also backdated from the 1st of March, but not receive reimbursement from the ATO until May. If so, then businesses will need to cover any shortfall from their own cash reserves or via short-term loans. But the problem is, my surveys show that many businesses are already in strife with little cash reserves. And then, of course, employers will be eligible for the subsidy if their businesses had a turnover of less than $1 billion and the turnover will be reduced by more than 30% relative to a comparable period a year ago. Now, this seems like an arbitrary cutoff. What if your turnover was fallen by, let's say, 29%? You are still facing a financial crisis. But employees here will have to go for the lower $1,100 a fortnight job seeker, aka New Start scheme. In addition, only long-term casual employees that have been with the company for 1 year or more qualify for JobKeeper. For everyone else, they must instead fall back on the lower job seeker payment, so casuals will miss out, some 2 million plus of them. And as the Grattan Institute said, the scheme will generate some enforcement challenges and pockets of perverse incentives. Firms will have to apply to participate. Those with a turnover of below $1 billion will be eligible for the subsidy should turnover fall by 30% compared to the comparable period a year ago, or 50% for firms with a turnover of above $1 billion. So the accountants will be kept busy delaying the time of the sales to make sure their businesses qualify. And we should also expect firms to move some of their higher wage workers to part-time hours in the coming months to align with the government's flat rate subsidy. Now, I think a simpler universal basic income would have been more effective to implement and would have reached households sooner. But the government appears to have a doctrinal aversion to such a concept, as most of the massive support is flowing via businesses. So how much will truly land on the household's front line is an open question. And it's also worth reflecting on where China is now. Having been through the economic freeze, there are some signs of a thaw, but people are nervous. For example, to help jumpstart consumption again, authorities in some places are distributing vouchers, asking companies to give people paid time off, and offering subsidies on larger purchases like cars. And the domestic media are playing up stories of officials venturing out to enjoy local delights like bubble tea, hot pot, and pork buns. But it appears that many Chinese are still hesitant to return to their old lives. They're worried about whether it's safe to go outside, as well as financial pressures as unemployment continues to spike. The lukewarm response to the consumption campaign are a cautionary tale to governments around the world, who are hoping for a quick recovery once lockdowns are lifted. The hurdles China now faces are likely to arise elsewhere. And there are more signs that the health issues may reappear as the thaw occurs. For example, over the past 2 weeks, more than 600 movie theatres in China had begun to reopen. But now, China's film regulators have slammed the brakes on plans to gradually reopen the country's cinemas. While no reason for the policy reversal has been given, some suggest that it could be that the government is worried about a potential second wave of infections. The number of cinema tickets sold remains way down. And the latest Chinese Purchases Managers Index for March came in at 52%, which is a 16.3% increase from the previous month. Among the five classification indices constituting the manufacturing PMI, the production index, new order index, and employment index all rose above the critical point, and the raw materials inventory and supplier delivery time index were below the critical point. But a word of caution. This is a relative index, so a move from very weak to weak, whilst an improvement, does not necessarily signal a real turnaround. Yet more generally, the point is, locking the economy down is tough to do and creates a huge fallout, but the restart on the other side at some point is also complex. And the latest data from China on travel and hours worked are still well below long-term normal averages, and long-distance trips in particular are way down, according to the latest scorecard from Capital Economics. All more evidence of the trouble ahead. No V-shaped recovery here. And finally now, a quick look at the markets with Australia on the down day today, despite the better market news overnight from the US. And so to the markets, the ASX 200 closed down 2.02% today to 5,076. The financials index was down 0.44% to 4,263. And the real estate trusts were up 2.84% to 1,022. The volatility index was down 15.04% to 35.62, so a little less elevated, suggesting risk is off just a little. And the ASX 500 futures is down 1.52% to 5,178. Amongst individual lenders, the ANZ was up 3.22% to 16.69, despite the fact that the CEO warned that some businesses and households wouldn't make it through the downturn. CBA was up 0.44% to 61.19. NAB was up 3.55% and Westpac was up 3.82% to 16.31. The Bank of Queensland was down 0.99% to $5. And Bendigo and Adelaide Bank was down 2.64% to 6.27. Suncorp was up 0.33% to 9.03. And Macquarie was up 1.26% to 85.67. AMP was at 1.33. Genworth, the mortgage lender's insurer, was up 18.9% to 2.17. And McGrath was at 20 cents. And Yellow Brick Road was down 3.45% to 5.6 cents. AFG was up 5.81% to 1.36. And Murga's Choice was up 7.94% to 68 cents. While Cymec was up 1.75% to 23.25. The US other dollar was down 0.13% to 61.64. The euro Aussie dollar was down 0.36% to 1.7836. And the two-year bond was down 0.59% to 0.236, while the 10-year bond was down 5.03% to 0.764. The Aussie gold cross was down 0.83% to 2,620, while the Bitcoin Aussie cross was up 1.98% to 10,497. Just quickly recapping on the US markets overnight, the Dow Jones was up 3.19% to 22,325, and the volatility index was down just a little 0.93% to 56.55. The US 10-year was up 5.17% to 0.706, while the 3-month was up 17.08% to 0.104. And finally, the S&P 500 futures was up 0.7% to 2,629. And the NASDAQ 100 futures was up 1% to 7,932. So it'll be very interesting overnight to see whether the US markets are able to maintain momentum or whether they run out of smoke, as Australia did today. There are, of course, so many uncertainties in this environment, and so the market will perhaps be jumping at shadows. We will see. So we will continue to monitor the data as it comes out on a daily basis and see how things are tracking. But of course, the real question is, how much more of a lockdown are we going to need before we can really start moving forward? Because I don't think we are tight enough yet. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.